Steven Totillo of the MTV Multiplayer blog and Anagamers podcast. Thanks for the $100. Here's your intro.
Welcome to the Anagamers podcast. This is episode number 14 for Monday, April 13th, 2009, and we are podcasting from the observation deck of Mount Doom. Today, we are talking about some of the new anime being released during the spring 2009 Japanese television season. Hello, and welcome to the Anagamers podcast. I'm your host, Evan Minto, also known as Vampvo. My co-host today is a man who once destroyed a tank using only his teeth, the formidable Anagamers reviewer and otaku comedian, Uncle Yo.
Greetings and beatings, Anagamers.com. Good to be back. Good to hear you again, Vampvo.
So, how have you been doing? You haven't been on the podcast in quite a while, actually.
Oh my gosh, yeah, what haven't I been doing? I'm just coming back from two straight weeks of touring. I was up in Anime Land Wasabi in Denver right after the blizzard. We had a great convention there. Really wonderful time. Good to finally hang out with a lot of the fellow convention guests. And then right after that was Tokoshukan in Pittsburgh. And I gotta say, that staff, they are small, but they are mighty. I've never had such a very dedicated and really down-to-earth staff. I was hanging out in the green room with, I don't want to drop anything like names or anything, but certain excellent voice actors who got me into loving anime for screaming about love and peace and how it was Morphin time, and certain, you know, names like that that we simply won't drop because I'm already sitting on a pile of them. Oh yeah, a lot of great panels that have been run, a lot of very cool cosplay competitions, had a couple of improv shows that I was totally not ready for, but that's the joy of an improv show. You don't really prep for it. You can appear at the room 30 seconds before you're supposed to go up and just wing it. And that is what I loved about it. Just a lot of great experiences. I've got the Brooklyn Botanical Gardens coming up pretty soon. I've got Anime Boston as asked, and I just can't wait. And after that, who the heck knows? It's the summer convention season. Anything can happen, and sometimes it does.
Yeah, I was actually hanging out at Castle Point Anime Convention recently. I think the end of March it was.
Shout out to Castle Point. Woo!
Yeah, that is a fantastic little convention if you live in New Jersey or New York. I know you were there last year. That's actually where we met for the first time.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You weren't able to come this year, but it was a lot of fun. I mean, they only had one guest, but it was Bill Rogers, who's a really cool guy.
I've done improv with Bill Rogers down at ZenkaiCon. We did Whose Line Is It Anime. That guy has a spectacular sense of humor. He's also got a great knowledge of anime, of the business, and deep down, he's even more of a gushing fan than I am, and we're just both very good at hiding it as best we can. But yeah, Bill is just awesome.
Yeah, and actually, I ran my first ever panel, which is You Want to Be a Blogger / Podcaster, which is not a great name, but whatever. It was a panel with me, Ink, who's one of our writers.
Absolutely.
DJ Ranma S, who runs the Anime Jam Session podcast, and also Hisui, who's a blogger from ReverseThieves.com. So we all just sort of got up and talked about what it takes to be a great podcaster or blogger. And yeah, it was pretty successful. We had like, I don't know, five people in the room, but it was successful for a first panel.
Well, you know what? You still had more in the room than I did for my dynamic and effective dungeon mastering, game mastering panel that I did at out in Denver. Had about four guys, and they were all experienced DMs who basically gave me creative criticism and then introduced me to a new drink called the Munchkin. We then played Kobolds Ate My Baby until it was time for late night hentai fan dubbing. But hey, we'll get into that later. Or actually, no, we won't, because this is age appropriate, isn't it?
Yeah.
My fun is killed.
We don't talk about hentai. Well, we can mention hentai. We don't talk about it extensively.
No, we don't need to, because not all of us have as vast and impressive knowledge as certain people running certain conventions in certain cities named Denver.
Anyway, I've got a quick shout out to one of our listeners. Elliot sent us an email, our first ever email actually, so thanks for the support, Elliot. He also runs his own podcast called Luke and Elliot's Bear Fighting Extravaganza. They talk about video games, and they drink alcohol, and occasionally I think they fight bears.
Which is pretty damn awesome, if you ask me.
I can never understand what they're saying, though I'm not really sure if that's because of their accents or the alcohol.
So they're a pretty cool podcast. You can check them out at lukeandelliot.com. And one last thing is I was recently a guest host on the season opener of the Anime 3000 panel, which is the new reinvention of the podcast formerly known as the Anime 3000 podcast.
Go VanVo!
I was on there with Fightbait, who's from the Fightbait anime podcast, and also, I don't know how to say this name, like Morithale, I think it is, from AnimeDiet.net. You can find that at tinyurl.com/A3000, like the number, panel 1. And with that, let's get into what we've been doing. You want to start, Carl?
Oh, absolutely. Let's see. Big news for me was last season I talked a little bit about Shikibana Hime, which was Gainax's uber dark fantasy shoot-'em-up full of zombies and priests and schoolgirls and zombies and all that fun. That just ended. That's been a lot of fun. Down in Florida, my girlfriend got me into playing Mirror's Edge, and the problem with a game with such magnificent gameplay as that and such fluid kinetic energy is, as soon as you're done playing, you look at other cities and you look around and you think, L1, I think I can do this. I think I can do this. secret shoujo of mine, I like to call them closet shoujos, is a white album just came out. It was a series that perked my interest. It was a very fascinating telling about a relationship college age that was strained because the girl was becoming a pop star. And unbeknownst to a lot of us here in America, there are quite a few animes about becoming a pop star, not just Perfect Blue. Certainly didn't go down that path. It was much more of a romantic story, but I really ended up liking it. And I know it's got a whole other season to come out for it. I'm just excited for that one.
I have been watching Cyber City 808, which is the classic Yoshiaki Kawajiri OAV series. It's got three parts, and it's about cyber criminals who get collars put around their necks that will blow up if they disobey the warden.
I've seen this one, and they're all locked on an island with a bunch of schoolgirls, and they each have one weapon, right? That's a great movie.
No, but that would be a great movie. What this is about is they become essentially these sort of like cyber police guys. So they're police that are staffed by criminals. And if the criminals do anything bad, they get their heads blown up because the collar will blow up. Ooh. And I watched the first two parts of it. In the first part, there's a skeleton hooked up to a computer that is causing a building that goes up through the clouds and outside of the atmosphere to fall down. And the other one has...
Well, you can say that skeleton certainly had a bone to pick with the people down below.
Boom.
Ouch.
So the other story, the second one, is about a psychic robot with a sweet, like, sort of chain claw thing that it shoots at people.
Psychic and robot. What doesn't this show have? What doesn't it have?
You know what it does have? A robot saber-toothed tiger that shoots lasers out of its mouth. But that's in part three. I have yet to see that.
Oh, you just made my night, man. Take that, Conan.
So what I've been reading is people who read the blog and who listen to the final minute or so of the last episode will know about a book called Schoolgirl Milky Crisis, which is it's a book of collected essays from Jonathan Clements, who's been a translator. I think he's been like a voice actor sometimes. He's done a lot of different stuff. And he's actually British. And so he has a lot of very interesting things to say about the anime and manga industries. And he even talks about Godzilla movies and Korean movies, Chinese movies, both animation and live action. It's a very interesting book. It's really funny, too. He has a lot of stories about, like, when he was working as a voice director or as a voice actor, he had to be crammed into a recording booth that was about the size of a closet. It is definitely worth picking up, and if you want to pick it up without paying for it, We have two contests going on at AnnieGamers, one on the blog and one right here in the podcast. If you want to enter the podcast contest, the rules are pretty simple. Schoolgirl Milky Crisis is the name is a sort of silly name that Clements made up to describe anime when he wanted to keep the studios and creators innocent by not mentioning the title. And so just make up your own plot summary for Schoolgirl Milky Crisis and send it to us, either in text form or you could record it. Extra points if you record it. But just send that to us and we will read or play them on the show, and the one that we like the most will get a free copy of Schoolgirl Milky Crisis.
Schoolgirl Milky Crisis kind of sounds like the spin-off series to Super Milk Chan. Super Milk Chan discovers there's a level above annoyance. Fangirl annoyance. Her hair turns gold and things get ridiculous as... Well, moving on.
I've been playing a bunch of stuff also, but it's all stuff that I've talked about in previous episodes, like Fable 2 and Far Cry 2 and The World Ends With You, which I'm still playing. Still. I got that back in the summer.
Very good.
I can't stop grinding, though, and it's just like I keep getting tempted to raise my level, and I just have to continue to play it.
Be careful down that dark path. You play enough MMOs and you start becoming undead. You will forget to sleep. You will forget to eat. You will forget to go to the bathroom.
So that's all that we've been doing. We are going to take a break and come back with our discussion of the spring 2009 anime season.
Got a spring coming up, and with spring that means more anime, more new stuff coming over straight from Japan via sites such as Hulu.com, Crunchyroll.com, all legitimate ways to get your free new anime now. Vampvo, we've got a whole lot of list to go over, and how do you want to start this off?
I'm actually going to start with Natsu no Arashi. It means summer storm, I believe, and it's sort of off-the-wall comedy about people for whom time travel is a natural occurrence, and then hilarity ensues, naturally. It's the original creator from the manga creator is Jin Kobayashi, who's the creator of School Rumble, so just imagine that sort of comedy.
With time travel.
And then time travel.
Oh, I'm already happy.
So, the main character, his name is Hajime. He is short, wears big dorky glasses, and he's really loud and obnoxious. So think like Madarame from Genshiken, but really short. So pretty much awesome.
Excellent.
And the main girl, her name is Arashi, and she can travel through time, and she also has a German friend named Kaja, I think that's how you say it, mm-hmm. Who also travels through time and apparently travels through walls as well. The show doesn't really seem to have rules per se, but I'm all good with that. So they're all sort of working at a restaurant bar thing, and there's a maid girl there, and there's a really effeminate guy and some other side characters. So like the only problem with the first episode of Natsu no Arashi is the first episode has no exposition at all. They literally just throw you in. It's like, hey, Hajime is making a bomb that looks like a strawberry.
Yes.
And then he loses it. So Hajime has to pretty much try to get his bombs back so that nobody gets their head blown off. But this isn't like Cyber City Oedo head blown off. It's like sort of innocent comedy head blow off.
Oh, with the hair turned back all black and spiky, and there's just dust everywhere, and their eyes are just blinking like in a Looney Tunes.
Right.
Very nice.
Sort of like that.
It's more of an inconvenience than a terrorist threat if he loses his strawberry bombs.
And so just crazy stuff happens. Like people come into the restaurant and he doesn't like them, so he tries to serve them with the one fake strawberry that he has left. But they have to like go back in time to try to figure out where the other strawberries went, and you know, he's trying to like use them on people he doesn't like, and then he takes a strawberry shortcake, or he puts one on a strawberry shortcake, and then Kaja is she's the other girl who can who can travel through time, is like it's her strawberry shortcake, and then she starts going back in time to try to get it back, and it's crazy, and it's exactly like School Rumble. And so if you hated School Rumble, don't watch this. If you liked School Rumble, then watch it, because it's pretty funny, it's pretty crazy, and you don't really need to know what's going on, because it's, you know, it's just insane comedy. And in terms of the staff, the studio is Shaft, who worked on Boogie Pop Phantom, Mahoromatic, and Negima, the one with the question mark. The director is Akiyuki Shimbo, who did Magical Girl, Lyrical, Nanoha, some of the Negima OAVs, Moon Phase, and Sayonara Zetsubou-sensei. So definitely some pretty popular shows among the sort of crowd
who would
be watching this.
Pretty popular, pretty eclectic staff, it sounds like.
Well, I mean, like, I mean, the director worked on Nanoha and Sayonara Zetsubou-sensei, so those are, I think those, like, Sayonara Zetsubou-sensei definitely fits with the same sort of crowd that would watch Natsu no Arashi.
Then I'm going to get right in on that.
So, what are you talking about next?
What have I got going? Well, we're going to bring an old favorite back from the grave, just recently exhumed by Gainax. Hey, I can put in as many zombie puns as necessary, okay? All right, we just passed a Friday the 13th. I'm prepared, man. So we've got, so Shikabanahime, as I said, it was a dark supernatural shoot-'em-up that Gainax released, and Gainax's last big thing was Gurren Lagann, where they went back to their roots of giant robots, and this time they went back to what made what they are good at, and that is warping genres, and of course silly amounts of fan service that can almost take away from the seriousness of the scene. last season ended with the most excellent cliffhanger, that they were pretty much setting up who will become Makina's contracted monk to help her continue to fight Shikabani, or regretful ghosts, demons, as it were, and of course it's got to be the main character Ori. Because
he's the main character.
Yep, yeah, pretty much makes as much sense as possible. I mean, it wouldn't make any sense if like Chewbacca were the chosen one. You kind of wonder what's with this Luke guy. Why is he doing all the cool stuff if it's Chewbacca's story? Honestly, but Shikabanahime, I mean, I liked the animation. I didn't think it was a spectacular budget, but I didn't think it needed to be one because it had great action. It had a lot of that flowingness that you would expect from Fooly Cooly, with people leaping into the camera, especially that opening sequence. You see that opening sequence, it's all about Gainax. The quick zooming in, the quick zoom outs, the decaying schoolgirls. But season 2 finally wraps up the story, and although it did not end with the following people died, the following people lived, the following will be seen next season in Shikabanahime GT or Shippuden, it kind of ends on this cliffhanger. But while the story is not resolved, the characters are far more strengthened in their resolve than anything. So if anything gets resolved, it is the characters' dedications to choose life over death and passion over duty. And the relationship between Makina and Ori, it goes up into this interesting roller coaster, but it there's just this subtlety to this. This subtlety of, we've got no other choice but to work together. And I can't give you what you want, because I'm kind of dead, but...
just kind of.
You will do. And I talk to my friends about this. I mean, everyone in this series has a fascination with death, a love of death. So, hey, if you're a borderline necrophiliac, you are totally in on this series. But of course the question is, even if you wanted to make out with your Shikabanahime, your corpse princess, I mean, she has no pulse. Right. She's cold. Wouldn't your lips stick? Which, of course, brings into awkward situations like that. I mean, I had asked the main character, Makina, she blows things away with two Uzis. One, it's hard enough to aim an Uzi. Two, it's almost impossible to multitask with two guns in each hand. I don't care what Black Lagoon makes you think.
Or Halo.
And then three, you've got two Uzis going at once. Where is she keeping the extra ammo belts? As it clearly shows in the opening animation, she's barely wearing panties.
Okay, listen, you saw Gurren Lagann. You know that Gainax has no need for silly things like logic.
You win this round, Vampvo! There shall be a day. Like I said, I really like Shakeup on a Hime. I mean, there was a lot of interesting things that it certainly twisted and perverted and brought up neat arguments of what do you love, where does your duty lie, and oddly enough, for the same culture that gave us samurais and ninjas, the glorification of death on the battlefield, this was a very ironic choice that Gainax went, that it was more posing the question of not who is alive, what makes you alive, but why will you choose it every time? This coming from the same culture that gave most of its trainees two options, life and death, honor and dishonor, but they weren't always together. Join us and live forever in glory! Well, how do I get out? You can't! If you leave, we kill you and you die in dishonor. Or you stay with us and you die on the battlefield, and ultimate honor!
So you die either way.
Caught between a rock and a hard place, however you want to put that. But I enjoyed Shikup on a Hime, and you know what? The whole thing is free right now at Hulu.com. Thank you, Hulu. You helped me catch up to everything that DVR cannot.
And thank you to Funimation for, because Funimation is in on that. They
always
have
Funimation.
The
I got it. And hey, Funimation is giving us the second incarnation of Full Metal Alchemist. If you haven't had the chance to watch the entire 54 episode first story of Full Metal Alchemist, here's your chance to start again. Not on the same story, same characters, same world. They're just gonna go in a different direction with it. And you know what? It's the same direction that we've come to know and love, but it's not as dynamic a shift from say Hellsing and Hellsing Ultimate. Because I've seen a lot of division between Hellsing fans and Hellsing Ultimate fans. I don't think we're going to get this with the second season of Full Metal Alchemist. So that's my take on Shikup on a Hime. Vague, but heck, a lot of awesome action that I was very satisfied to see.
So next up, I'm going to talk about Ristorante Paradiso, which I think is the right way to say that because it's in Italian. I think it's Jose. That's probably what I would call it. Because it's not quite shoujo. It's sort of a wish fulfillment, romantic drama, reverse harem thing. And I watched it because I heard a lot of stuff about it because it was on Crunchyroll. And I was like, well, whatever, I'll give this a try.
Hey, everything is worth a try.
But it turns out that I don't actually like it, which is natural seeing as Jose means it's for older women. And since I'm a younger man, it doesn't really fit.
You are the complete opposite of that demographic.
So it's about a character who... Oh, yeah, what's her name? Nicoletta. Her mother left her when she was young, and her father... Her mother divorced from her father, and then her mother left her with her grandmother. And so she's, like, angry at her mother. And then she goes to Rome...
to solve all of her problems and pursue her lifelong career of being a gladiator?
Maybe the first one, probably not the second one. Though I would watch it if it was the second one. So she ends up in... I forget why she's in Rome. It's not that important. Because what's important is that she gets to a restaurant and finds out that her mother is going out with the owner of the restaurant. And all of the men who work at the restaurant, because they're all men, are older men with glasses. You can see where this is going, right?
I'm thinking Azumanga Daioh, but horribly, horribly perverted. But that's where my mind goes every time.
Well, like, the main character is, I believe, in her 20s, so it's, you know, it's the Jose thing. It's, she, you know, she's older. And then they're all, like, older men. It's all this weird sort of fetish with, like, older men and glasses. So, I mean, unless you have that fetish, I don't really...
I don't think we have anyone in our listening audience who has something like that fetish.
Who knows? You know what? We're expanding our audience. I guess.
You know, you gotta give the fans what they want, man. We'll pull in as many people as we can, and I guarantee you I will offend each and every one of them.
So there's like a mother-daughter conflict. So the daughter's like, oh, you left me when I was a kid and I don't like you anymore. And the owner of the restaurant won't marry somebody who's been divorced, I guess. And so the daughter is sort of threatening to tell him that her mother was divorced so that he won't love her anymore or something. It's sort of a weak conflict between the two because it's like the daughter is angry at her mother, but not, which I guess is pretty much families in general. But it's just sort of like if the villain is your own mother and the conflict is simply like, I'm sort of angry at my mother. That's not really a conflict that I think can pull through the whole story.
No, but it sounds like almost every biography I've ever read of an Italian Brooklyn. Or at least Woody Allen's autobiography.
And there's also probably the worst exposition scene I have watched in a long time because Nicoletta sits down, just inexplicably gets invited to lunch with the men from the restaurant. And she just sits down with them and says, which one of you is the most popular with the ladies at the restaurant? Because all these women come to the restaurant because they love the men. Sort of like Oran High School Host Club. And she asks them that, and they just go into 5 minutes of describing each other for the viewer's sake. It's like, you know, this guy likes this, and this guy likes that. And so it just felt really, really cheap and tacked on.
I think I can top that. Not in anime, but on the stage. The Russian playwright Chekhov opens his one of his most famous plays, Three Sisters, with all three sisters sitting around, and I think it's the middle sister who has the first 5 minutes of the play. She sits up and says, "It was this day exactly that 5 years ago our father passed away," and gives you everything you could ever need to not know about the play, and then from there, it just goes downhill. Take that, you dead Russian playwright. You see, I've offended dead people, I've offended theatergoers, I've offended the Russians. I'm good at what I do.
Commendable. So the original manga creator for Ristorante Paradiso is Natsume Ono, who I think has done nothing else, because I couldn't find anything, or anything major at least, on Anime News Network. And really, Anime News Network is the first and last place to look for us.
First and last for me.
The studio that worked on the anime is David Production, I think. That sounds like a very weird name for an anime studio. But the only thing I could find by it that was notable was animation production on Code Geass R2. But I mean, like, they must have just helped out with Sunrise, because Sunrise is in charge of that.
Pretty much.
The director is Mitsuko Kase, who did work on Saikano, some Gundam stuff, Votoms, Paddle Labor, Zabungle, They Were 11, like weird things that don't really fit with this show, but I mean, I guess
they needed the money.
He worked on Rumbling Hearts. Way. That's the closest thing I could find that's sort of similar to this.
What?
And actually, the interesting thing is the art director was Yasufumi Soejima, and he worked on, so, you know, I don't know, Final Fantasy Unlimited, Last Exile. But the interesting part is he did textile design for Gankutsuo. And I'm sure most of our listeners have heard of or seen Gankutsuo, which has some very, very weird texture designs. They're sort of hard to describe. The textures stay there, and then the characters move. And, yeah.
You know what? In some cases, I like it, but in very, very small doses, and I think that aesthetic can actually be distracting from the action of the scene if it goes on too long.
Yeah, that was one of the complaints about it. It's an interesting technique, and actually, I noticed it was used in Ristorante Paradiso, but only in small amounts, like you said. So,
ah.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's sort of just thrown in there, and it gives a sort of... It gives a different look to the show that fits pretty well with the Italian aesthetic, because it sort of makes it look a little bit more like a painting.
So what would you say? Would you say that you recommend this, or would you say leave it alone, or is it worth my taking an MSK 3000 to it?
It's not terrible. It's just I don't think it works for anybody other than hardcore Jose fans, because it's...
Both of them.
So, yeah, it really only works if you're into that sort of reverse harem sort of thing, and it doesn't have that much going for it, so you've got to be really into this sort of show to want to watch it. And you can catch that on Crunchyroll. I believe all of our shows can be caught on either Crunchyroll or Hulu, all the shows we're talking about today.
Hey, we're going as legit as possible. We are ushering in a new era, and the fans are backing it.
And finally, the last show we're going to talk about is Shangri-La. We're both going to take that since we both watched it. So you watched only the first episode?
We've got the first two episodes on Crunchyroll, and I was very happy to watch them both.
Okay, you
watched
them both.
Well, there we go. That's right, we're now on the same grounds.
Okay, so you want to explain the plot? As complicated as it is.
As complicated as it is. Oh, yeah. Now talk about a series that that throws you in the middle of it. There's a lot of irony to be found in Shangri-La. First off, this thing is given to us by Gonzo, the same people, in fact, a lot of the same crew that gave us something very memorable, Blue Submarine 6 and Last Exile, a personal favorite of mine that I thought never really got the attention that I thought it could very much have. Well, it could have gotten a lot more cosplay out of it. I think there was a lot of love and a lot of attention behind the details of that series. But Gonzo is good at giving us series that really give you a question about humanity's state with nature, humanity's future, and it really can give you different worlds and different aesthetics where you think, oh, whoa, they really took their time in creating this. Definite top-level animation, but Shangri-La, this series begins with an 18-year-old girl being released from prison. Name any other anime that has begun that way.
Yeah, I did like that opener.
And here you have this little girl stepping out of it. You see a prison, and you see all these people cheering, but you hear all these women, these girl voices, and the one being released is this pink-haired schoolgirl.
Pink-haired. Oh my gosh, I couldn't get over the
short,
pink-haired
schoolgirl. So Shangri-La, let's see, it's the future. Where in the future? Something like the 21st, 22nd century, and believe it or not, guys, 20XX. Al Gore was proven right. Why? Because so much carbon dioxide was released into the atmosphere that the sea levels began to rose. No, they began to rise. Grammar fans. Hey, they can do both. I'm not here to judge, okay? Sea levels, you do whatever you want. But in this series, they go up. They were here, now they're up, and India's underwater. But so Tokyo's underwater, and it's sort of becoming like this.
It's a giant literally, jungle, right?
Giant jungle. Yeah. It's literally, as Anime News Network describes it, urban jungle. Now, there are so many strange political manipulations going on that we've just seen in the first two episodes. There's this whole financial backstory of the carbon tax and people being manipulated and bullied and almost yakuza'd into raising the carbon percentage and the carbon tax. And you'll see people freak out, it's up to 1.3! And you'll say, that number means nothing to me!
Well, I think a little explanation is in order with the carbon tax, because that's one of the crucial elements of the story. It's as far as I understand, it's that based on how much carbon dioxide a country produces, it gets taxed by, I guess, some sort of world government that a lot of times it will essentially be it'll be taxed more money than its economy was bringing in for making that carbon. Mm-hmm. So it's this sort of broken system that is attempting to
balance
stop
out
global
developed
warming,
right? Companies and encourage underdeveloped companies to become green.
Yeah. And of course the system is not the system exactly, but like there's this
the
weird holding
it,
company.
Very corrupt.
There's a weird holding company that is trying to like game the system, and it's run by a little girl.
With a teddy bear and a lollipop, and she is deadly.
I don't even know. She has a teddy bear, and she sits in front of a computer all day. I would usually call that a World of Warcraft player.
Basically, man, I mean, I don't see her blinking, and that's my prerequisite to get into World of Warcraft. So, you know what? We should figure it out. The story is told through our protagonist, who is 18-year-old Kuniko Hojo, the girl who is released from prison back into her home community of Duomo, and the higher ups have a different name for it, but Duomo will call it. It's this very down to earth. Hey, if you were a fan of Origin, Spirits
from
the Past.
That is what I was thinking. I haven't seen that movie, but what I've seen of it, it was very reminiscent of Origin.
You must, because Gonzo made that too. Nausicaa would be very proud of this. And, you know, there's just a lot of Gonzo and a lot of Last Exile, because there's a whole lot of resource battling in it, a lot of political manipulation, a lot of power struggle, a lot of poor versus rich, and a whole lot of unexplained kind of flying sequences. Gonzo likes to do that Miyazaki thing where someone will go up in the air or come down from an incredible height and just not take any damage. Our main character, Kuniko Hojo, she's released from prison, and there ready to meet her are the people, the headliners of the anti-government movement called
Metal Age.
Metal Age.
And of course the characters who meet her are
two transvestites
and a guy with a beard who has no backstory as of episode 2.
No, but man, do those transsexuals kick ass.
Well, not the fat one. He, she, it doesn't really do anything except for be fat and complain about being fat. The other one
has a whip. Need to make me laugh. Momoko is excellent. Momoko, as we learned in episode 2, used to be an Olympic-level gymnast and decided to give it up to become a woman. And her specialty attacks are the whip and... There's a point where she takes down a whole... Where he, she, and this person takes down a whole troop of government agents by making out with one, dropping him, turning to the other crew, screaming, "Man!" and chasing after them as they run away in sheer panic. Now, you see the character and you think, oh, wow, that's kind of hot. And then it opens its mouth.
Yeah, I know. I was so surprised.
Living in New York City, I thought I was
used... ashamed.
yeah. Living in New York City, I'm more used to that scenario than other people, but I was still kind of taken aback to it.
And actually, how about Kuniko in terms of being taken aback? I didn't realize until I read, I think, the Wikipedia page that she was 18 years old. Because she looks like she's 14 or something.
She looks definitely 14, okay? Gonzo, you've got to be able to distinguish older teenager from younger teenager, because I did not know that Klaus Volkmann and Remy, I believe, from... I loved Remy from Last Exile. They're supposed to be like 16, 17, 18. They definitely still look 12. It's the fact that they do the bigger eyes and like the perfect... round-shaped head.
I think it owes to Range Murata's character design style, which is what...
Absolutely. The
what
big
you were
Murata
mentioning before, that you mentioned Blue Sub 6, Last Exile, and this show, all three are animated by Gonzo with character designs by Range Murata. So, like, Range Murata has a really cool style. I really like the way the characters look. But yes, it makes the young characters look too young.
And, you know, what I really want to say about the character design, sometimes you'll get companies like, I want to say, Clamp, or sometimes Gainax. They'll cater to the cosplaying community, the fan community. And I feel like Last Exile produces a lot of costumes that are not so iconic in anime, that they go more for the substance of what they're trying to tell, substance of story, over style.
What is the substance of the pink hair?
The substance of the pink hair is that it reflects light wrong, and no Japanese girl has pink hair naturally. If you or any of your friends have pink hair naturally, consult a physician. Because it's not natural, and it is something that we can fight before it spreads. You see, I am also out here to offend the pink-haired people. Okay? I know there are two of you hiding out in Iceland somewhere. I will find you.
So, what else do we have to say about this? Oh, right. Kuniko has the best boomerang ever.
Okay, seriously, what is the size of it? Sometimes it's the size of a switchblade. Sometimes it's big enough for her to, like, skateboard on it. Is it 4 feet or 4 inches?
It doesn't matter.
Make up your mind, boomerang. It cuts through tanks.
It's the coolest
boomerang.
It's a tank
cutting boomerang. It's the best boomerang since Sokka from Avatar.
Yeah, that's like it is criminally underused in the first two episodes. I mean, it is really, really cool. It does cut through tanks. And I mean, really, if you need to watch this show for any other reason, a boomerang cuts through tanks.
And you just take it and you roll with it because you're just so sopped up in the beautiful animation. I mean, this series has already gone into a jungle, into an abandoned subway, into a prison, into places you can't even identify. It's gone all around. And it start off with all this great energy, and I'm really excited to see where Shangri-La is going to go.
I'm also excited for it, but it's not, like, I was not totally blown away by it. Like, the world was very interesting, the characters were interesting, but there were definitely too many characters and too many things going on within the first two episodes.
Tried to hook too many people at once, and that is a very interesting thing that we look for in every season of anime, in every season of new animes coming out that are not continuations of previous seasons. The strangest and hardest thing to do is write that first pilot episode, because you've got to get people hooked without giving away all the mysteries you're going to explore. You've got to set something up where they need to watch for the next episode. You've got to leave them with a cliffhanger. You've got to give them someone that they can hook up to right off the bat. You got to give them a character they can sink their teeth into. You've got to be as developed as you can without giving everything away.
And part of that is probably because it was adapted from a science fiction novel. So a science fiction novel has a lot more time to set up that world. But because, like you said, the pilot episode, you have to hook people. Gonzo had to try to fit that science, at least a brief description of that science fiction world, into the first episode so that viewers would have some idea what was going on.
Everywhere they can. A classic example of this, I want to say, is the Golden Compass movie. Now, for fans like me...
Big fan of that book.
Yeah, who enjoyed the book series, there was at least... Now, you're halfway through the second book before they finally lay it out and tell you... You know, this happened in a different universe than ours, right? Like, we're going to do the whole parallel dimension thing, right?
Yeah.
Do you catch on to that? Now, in the movie version, they could not do that. The first 30 seconds is, so there's this other world, don't be scared, where people's souls are animals. And you feel like they're shoving so much detail of the world and backstory into these two-minute lines of dialogue, just spacing out for crowd-pleasing fight sequences and action moments, and it can really take away... from the joy that a novel and a short story can have of pacing and developing, but they're different mediums.
Right, it's a good point. With Shangri-La, I really feel like it does have a lot of potential, but it's really going to have to...
Look, Gonzo is also famous for a little thing called the bait and switch. They will definitely start a series out and end it nowhere near where you thought it was going to go.
That's the one thing I'm afraid of here, that, like, it's got great potential, and I could see it sort of spiraling out and being sort of dumb and bad before the end. And I really hope it keeps up the good things it's doing and manages to sort of maybe slow down its pace a little bit and explain things a little better. But the characters are good.
Without having that mid-season two.
Yeah.
Stink, that slow, that pacing where they think, filler arc, flashback, recap, oh crap.
And I do want to say there was a weird scene in the second episode where they're fighting, where some of the main characters, Momoko and Kuniko, are fighting with what I presume is another main character, a member of the military, and they're running through a jungle. And Kuniko and Momoko are talking about something about, like, Momoko's surgery to become a transvestite or something. And the military guy comes out of the bushes and just sort of, like, joins in on the conversation without shooting at them. And I was like, that seems sort of goofy for a show that seems to be trying to make mature points about ecology.
About ecology, about economy, and oh my gosh, I talked about this in my review of Spice and Wolf. Dear anime, dear Japan, no matter what genre you try to insert, the economy and economic principles will never be a good storyline. They will never be a good focus. They will never be something interesting or worth listening to because they don't really exist. It's about money, which is not something that really exists. It's just this theory. It's this number game that rich nerds get to play to manipulate the rest of us and sell DVDs for more than they're supposed to be. It's a numbers game. It's not the focus of a story. I don't care whether you have a naked wolf furry transforming and attacking a shepherd or whether you have a 4-foot tank-cutting boomerang. Gonzo, you've had your chance. You've done Last Exile. Started good. You had Claymore. You had Witchblade. Claymore, or as I call it, Berserk with boobs. Witchblade, or as I call it, boobs that go berserk. I actually hung out with the English dub voice actress who played Claire, and Stephanie had a great sense of humor about that, and she really was just an excellent, talented person who apparently had not read the manga as far as I had. But hey, Gonzo, they have a lot of, they have a big budget, and when they put out a good show, when they put their budget and their shoulder behind the animation, my goodness, some of these forests are some of the most beautiful I have seen. If you were drawn to the aesthetic value of
Origin,
yeah, then please check this out.
Yeah, I think this is definitely worth looking at. Like, try it out, and if you're interested, watch it until it turns to crap, and hopefully it won't turn to crap so that you can just keep watching it.
You know what? I feel like that's the pitch of every car salesman. Keep this till it dies on you.
Yeah, so this has a lot of potential, and I really like it. It's making interesting points. I know you said the economy is boring, but I think it is making some interesting points about our economy. I mean, like, the world economy now, even. Because if you think about it, the carbon, the stuff they're doing with carbon, where they're putting it into fake accounts and things and mixing it around so that people owe less carbon than they less money because of the carbon tax than they actually do, is reminiscent of what caused our current economic crisis here in America. So they are making interesting commentary, not only about the environment, but also about economics and how a lot of times the money that's being bandied about is imaginary money.
Is imaginary money, but can still put people into debt.
Right.
Which is what puts us into this bizarre place that we are right now, where no one knows what happened, but we're pretty sure it's bad. No one knows what's bad, but we're pretty sure it happened.
And with that, we are going to take a break and come back with Links of the Day.
We are Luke and Elliot, Bear Fighting Extravaganza.
We talk about technology, gaming news, and whatever we feel like talking about, to be honest.
Yeah, usually while drinking or on the way to being drunk. So if you can stomach English accents and a pair of pillows with a crap microphone, then tune in, by all means. If this tickles your fancy, go to lukeandelliot.com and download our episodes from there. Or look on iTunes for Luke and Elliot, although you may need to try more search terms like video games just to find us. Thank you.
Welcome back. We are going to start with Carl's Link of the Day.
My Link of the Day. Well, I usually float around the list generators and the Photoshop contests of Cracked.com, and those guys have never let me down. And they have shared in something that I have shared for a long time, and that is my disdain for Michael Bay's fingerprints everywhere directing style. What they have released is a imaginary script that Michael Bay wrote for his storyline of Transformers 2, complete with his childlike doodlings and scribblings and suggestions where he can insert more gratuitous boobage. So please check it out. And
are they boobs that transform?
They do. And sometimes the Transformers get boobs. In fact, they had a Photoshop list. Things with boobs that don't normally have boobs. Yeah.
Wait.
Yeah.
I'm not fully sure if you're kidding.
Evan, I'm not kidding. It was a Photoshop competition. Things with boobs that don't normally have boobs. And you know what? The fans really paid off. This is a creative and very funny site. These are the guys that gave me such lists as 6 psychotic parasites you don't know about but will turn you into a zombie. They did the 6 degrees of separation, somehow connecting Paris Hilton to every major genocidal maniac of the past decade. They are amazing human beings. So my link of the day is Michael Bay's is an imaginary Michael Bay script rejected for Transformers 2.
You can find that at tinyurl.com/AGP0014Carl. Carl with a K, you know, because that's how you spell his name.
Absolutely.
My link of the day is, I'm sure you've heard of Mega 64, Carl, right?
Mega 64.
The fantastic people who do awesome video game comedy videos. One that I found that's sort of, it's actually rather anime related. It's from a little while ago. Some people have probably seen it, but it's called Cosplayers Dan's Fantastic. That's with a Z replacing all of the S's.
Oh, no.
It's pretty much, I think they went to PAX and some other, I think they go to anime conventions sometimes. So they just went to some of these conventions and sort of just took video of people. And then sort of just put that video together with a Freeze Pop song and edited it to be something about cosplayers dancing fantastic.
That's excellent. Freeze Pop and put on a heck of a show at Tokoshukan.
So they have a lot of really ridiculous captions for all of their shots that they have. So they've got like a guy drive, like not most of them aren't even cosplays. So it's like a guy is in some sort of cart driving around the con with a wolf head on the front, and it just says Wheeled Beast Cosplays. And it just has, like, a shot of a guy taking a sip out of his drink, and it says, Sips Cosplay. So, just imagine that for a whole video.
I will say about this is Time Child. Time Child and Ghetto Vader make everything all right.
Are you watching it right now?
You know what? I can't resist. This is hurting me, but it's amazing. Because that I think that's the best part about the geek community is being able to take something from source material and then putting your own spin on it. Like for me, I love the people who put on the Naruto headbands that don't have Leaf Village symbols on them, who have like Epic Fail, the Decepticon symbol, the Autobot symbol, the Anger crosshair symbol, and then someone who's able to take that and make a whole collection of that. It's so much fun.
Are you pretty much waiting until somebody makes a headband that has the happy, fluffy, I don't know the full name, your cupcake thing?
As soon as they do, I will rip that thing off and sue them to no end.
Well, but what if... See, you should make it, though. You should have somebody make that, and then you should sell it.
A ninja cupcake. Good Lord. Good Lord, the calories it could inject before you even knew about it! You know, as soon as I find an Uncle Yo, as soon as I run into an Uncle Yo cosplayer, I think I will stop doing this. I will stop performing because there would be something too iconic and too strange about this beast I have created.
So anyway, you can find that link to the Mega 64 video at tinyurl.com/M64cosplay, like Mega 64 cosplay. You get it, guys?
Mega 64, thank you for the compilation.
And that is all that we have tonight for you guys. Let's see, I gotta do my ending thing. You can find our blog at anniegamers.com. That's got news, reviews, and more about your favorite anime, manga, and video games. You can find information about the podcast at podcast.anniegamers.com. That'll have show notes and lots of other goodies for you. You can subscribe to our feed at feeds.feedburner.com/anniegamerspodcast. Please review us on iTunes. Give us 5 stars. And then tell your friends to give us 5 stars. And if your friend gives us 1 star, kill them.
They're no longer your friend.
And finally, enter our contest. You can enter on the blog also. You can enter both, and then you can only win one, but you have twice the chance to win. Just please enter. I got to give this stuff away, and it's a really good book. So send us, again, if you weren't paying attention before because you were sleeping, because you're dumb, you should send us your brief plot summary of Schoolgirl Milky Crisis, the imaginary anime created by Jonathan Clements, in either text or audio form, extra points for audio. We will pick our favorite, and that person will be sent a free copy of the book. That is all we've got for you tonight. Say goodbye, Carl.
You got it. Take care, guys. We'll see you next time at AnnaGamers.com.
Goodbye.
Claymore, or as I call it, Berserk with boobs. Witchblade, or as I call it, boobs that go berserk.